Every family has great stories, as you know. And I'm going to slide this down because that seems a little louder than I want. There we are. Has great stories. And as it is, whenever the family gets together and we've done the usual sort of greeting and catching up with each other, then some of those favorite stories of the family get trotted out and get retold again. And that's how it is. And every time we open up the Bible in here, that's exactly what we're doing. We're taking the favorite stories that have emerged within this community and retelling them, but for purpose. I mean, they began as specific events, and they were told and then retold, and then they were heard and listened to and sent somewhere else, and somebody else told it to another group of people, and a wider and wider community got to telling these stories, and they gathered into other stories that were part of the lore of that wider community. And we might ask, you know, how is it that it became part of sacred story? And what was it that rose them to that level? Because as they're being told and retold, and they get written down, and they're codified and solidified, but they also then become sacred story within the life of that community. And certainly, there would have to be the activity of God within such stories, but also, they would have to be very truthful and honest to the human experience. Because in the retelling of those stories, people could see their own lives and be addressed by the holiness of God through those stories being told over and over again. In that sense, the scripture as we encounter it is a kind of sacred mirror where we are meant to see things that might speak to us into our own experience. So let's take the first story, the story from the Old Testament as it is for today. It comes from a period of the kings and kingdoms, 800 years before Christ. So this is a story we've been telling for 3,000 years. And the person we meet is called Naaman, which means to be pleasant. Except he's not very pleasant when we catch up with him in the Bible. He's actually a very unhappy person at this time. He's the commander of the army of Aram. Aram is to the north. And he's very successful as the commander-in-chief of this army. The army is strong. It's well-armed. There's been periods of skirmishes with the people of Israel, the kingdom of Israel. There's also been some all-out battles with them. And they've come to a point of sort of détente, pressurized peace, let's say. They both know that they could each do a lot of harm to each other. So they've decided not to harm each other. And, you know, you stay there and we'll stay here and let's just leave it like that. Détente. So Naaman, as the commander-in-chief of this Aram and this army, I mean, he has the confidence of the king. He's been very successful in battle. He's, has the loyalty of the soldiers. He would have all the successes, will have achieved all of the all of the things that people might aspire to that's part of that culture, lavish home and estates and lands and servants and all those sorts of things, and we can do the substitutions for our own time. But underneath his armor, there is an insidious skin disease that he cannot cure, that if it's found out, if what is hidden within himself is found out, it will destroy him. Because in the culture of that time, if you had a skin ailment of any form, you were in quarantine for 30 days. And if it persisted, then you could be called leprous. And it's not just you have leprosy, you are leprous and you must separate yourself completely. You are exiled into colonies where you lived out your days, could no longer be with your spouse, your children, your family members, you were done. So what is being dealt with inside has potentially tremendous risk to him. But let's, you know, I don't want to dismiss the value of the armor. The armor is not a problem. I mean, the armor is part of the responsibility, the sign of the responsibility that he carries. And he probably carries that weight very seriously and tries to do his best and do all that's right, because you've always got people who are sort of biting at your ankles, and they want to have their turn at the job and that sort of thing. And so he's got to perform well, and he's taken a lot of hits over the years. So the armor is not just what's given into the role, but it's also what has been developed in the persona That's sort of been hammered out. This is the person I need to be able to survive in this environment. But underneath, there is this creeping, incurable leprosy. And he's fearful of what will happen. Now, it's interesting that the biblical description of leprosy that occurs in the book of Leviticus, the book of laws, when physicians have looked at those descriptions, they have said, well, you know, those descriptions of biblical leprosy don't actually fit purely the condition of leprosy. That they actually may describe a whole series of possible grouping of skin diseases, psoriasis, eczema, psoria, and mycotic infections, and so on, which, if they persist, and they can persist, could lead someone to eventually being named as leprous and exiled and rejected. But, you know, it could have been, as one scholar said, it could have been he had a new armor, there was new leather, there was an allergic reaction to it, and mold. I mean, it's not like we have to solve the problems of the Bible, but, I mean, that's always a possibility. And having wearing it all the time that this has developed, and it's continuing on and on. But whatever the cause, he can't get rid of it. He's tried everything. He's seen every physician possible. He's thrown all the money at it that's possible, and it's terrifying. It's a desperate moment. But as long as he keeps wearing the armor and others do not see what's going on, then he could survive for now. Now, there are those who know. The king would know. Of course, his wife would know. His wife's servant girl, who was captured during a raid into Israel and brought back as a kind of servant within their household, knows. It's probably his closest advisors would know. But all of those people, in a sense, are covering for him now, helping him to deal with this. And of course, there's times in life when any of us might be called into a role of having to cover for someone, make excuses for them, try and help them in some way from not self-destructing in certain ways, or that somebody does that for us as we need some time to work something out. Maybe it's a medical condition that needs attention, and we don't want everybody else to know about it, so we keep it quiet and people tell a few white lies and that sort of thing. But anyway, for this moment, they are covering for him. And one day, when tears and so on have erupted, the servant girl from Israel says, "If only my Lord were with the prophet who is in Samaria, he could cure him." And it strikes a chord, and I mean, it just shows how desperate he is, because he's willing to go even to his enemy and seek this out. And so he goes to the king. The king writes a letter, gives him leave. He goes. He's got to face the humiliation of going before the king of Israel, who sort of shouts and says, "You got to be kidding me. Am I supposed to solve your ailment? I mean, who do you think I am?" And then the word goes, well, you know, just send him anyway. Send him to Elijah. And Elijah says, "It's fine, bring him." So he makes that journey, and it's always a long journey. Healing is always a long journey. It takes time. Sacrifice. There's no quick fix. And he faces that humiliation and eventually reaches the home of the prophet of Samaria. And he's there with the entourage of other horsemen and others, and they're there, and he's waiting, and a messenger comes out of this little hut. And the messenger says, Elijah says, "Go and wash 7 times in the River Jordan, and you will be made whole. You'll be made clean." He's thinking, "I've made this enormous journey. I've succumbed to all of this humiliation. I've done all these things. And this prophet doesn't have the courtesy to come out and at least see me and examine me like all the others and make some sacrifice or incantations or present some ointments or anything. He just told me to go wash in a river," and he shouts out, "Are the rivers of Aram not better than Israel?" And he wheels around and gallops off in a rage. His companions ride out to him and try to console him and say, "Look, if the prophet had asked you to do something difficult, you would have done it. But he's asked you to do something simple, so just do it, you know. It's not that bad. Let's just go and do it." And so he goes down to the river. And because his task is to wash, it means that he must disrobe. And all of those protective layers have to be taken off where he has to see in the full sunlight all that ugliness, all of that that he's been struggling with is now open and exposed. And maybe he shouted for privacy, and along the Jordan River there's high, high reeds that grow, so it would have been easy to go into a sort of enclave of reeds and be private and alone. But alone there, he sees and has to befriend all of that reality that's been hidden, all those imperfections. And seven times he has to touch and look at it and wash. Now, seven, when we think of seven within the Bible, where do we hear the number seven? The 7 days of creation. So some have suggested, well, maybe it was for 7 days, each day a new washing. And each day a day in the sun. It's so hot and dry in the Jordan River Valley with the exposure to the dryness of the wind and so on, and then another day of washing and so on, that gradually this condition dissipates and he is restored. So what is this story about? Why do we tell this? It's about personal power and self-importance that always needs to be challenged. It's about the struggle that most of us have to accept the help of another. It's about the hidden cost that sometimes comes with responsibility and leadership. It's about the eternal truth that underneath every persona and every armor and so on, there is a real human person who has something that they're working at that maybe they don't want everybody to know about, but they want to deal with in some way or be healed. And perhaps most of all, it's a story about the healing that's possible when we have learnt to bow to another power that we recognize as greater than our own personal power. And in that moment, then we discover not only our need, but our inability to resolve always our own things, that can now break us open to the healing, grace, restoration, power, and love of God in Jesus Christ. So may that mercy and strength be with us, as we are all human people before the love of God and before these ancient stories as they sweep past our lives from time to time. Thanks be to God.